far removed from socialite soirees as they could get. And you say someone pressed the invite into your hand? Luddy said, moving swiftly on. Can you give me a description? Tell me where it was you met.
I'd love to, darling, but I go to so many, Hannah said, apologetically. And I'd had quite a few glasses of champagne that night. All I remember is seeing a black card with the word debauchery in red letters. There was a website address and some numbers underneath.
Hannah frowned as she raked her memory.
What was it he said again? Something about a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I told him that I had just broken up with my partner, so I was free to see whoever I wanted. He lost interest after that.
She tilted her head to one side.
Come to think of it, he took back the card. I asked if I could keep it, but he said it was very exclusive. I was a bit miffed because I don't like being kept out of anything.
FOMO, Luddy smiled, offering up an explanation in response to her confused expression. Fear of missing out. Laughing much louder than necessary, Hannah gave his knee a brief squeeze.
Oh, you are adorable. I do like you. Yes, you could call it that. I like to experience everything at its fullest. Don't you?
Her words slowed as she drew breath, her eyes on Luddy like a panther circling its prey.
Life would be terribly dull if we didn't try something different every now and again.
Ruby had heard enough. Sliding her phone from her pocket, she pretended to look surprised. I forgot I put this on silent. I've got a call coming in. I'll meet you outside when you're done, she said, leaving them together. 5 minutes later, DC Ludgrove met her out by the front of the car.
Finished already? Ruby said, lowering the phone from her ear.
Hannah waved politely from the front door. Ruby got into the passenger seat, waiting until they were well out of earshot before she spoke again.
Did she try to eat you alive? She said, half-joking. Did you take one for the team?
Luddy smiled, looking like the cat who got the cream.
She was a bit of all right, actually. An ex-model, too.
Okay, Romeo, stick your tongue back in for a second. Did this ex-model give you any info worthy of our visit?
Luddy checked his mirrors as he negotiated the car out of the driveway and onto the road.
Yeah. After you left, she remembered details of the party where the guy gave her the invite, so that's worth checking out.
He threw her a guilty look.
And there's something else which I'd love to follow up on, but can't.
Oh, yeah? And what was that? Ruby said, enjoying the banter, despite everything that was going on.
Luddy delivered a smug smile. Her phone number.
Chapter 35. Swallowing, Mason Gatley could still taste the after-effects of the capsules he had been given half an hour before. They were slow-releasing, administered to treat him gradually throughout the day. Modified release dosage, they called it. For Mason, grinding the capsule between his back molars provided an instant kick. Tasted bitter as fuck, though. He took a sip from the plastic cup of water and swished it around his mouth. The table wobbled as he leaned on it to face his guest. The room was nothing more than an 8x8-foot box. Cream walls, strip lighting, and carrying the sickly scent of flowery disinfectant in the air. He missed the exotic smells of the outside world, and thought about it at night when he closed his eyes. But now the man sharing his space breathed new life into a usually dull day. Even better, they had been granted privacy. It was just the two of them here today. Matthew watched silently, keeping a close eye on Mason's every move. Mason supposed it wasn't easy to relax in the same room as a serial killer. The thought warmed him.
He could see the undisguised admiration in his eyes.
You know, there's one thing I'm curious about, Mason said, cocking his head to one side. You've never asked me if I'm sorry for what I've done.
Does it matter? Matthew replied. Mason thought it over.
No, I suppose it doesn't. But I'm wondering why you don't care. I've watched my words take effect, seen your eyes burn with something deep inside.
Matthew shrugged. I'm just grateful you chose to speak to me. I know how many people you've turned down. Mason smiled at the thoughts of the requests he had received to meet him. Before Matthew, they had dwindled to a trickle. He was old news, forgotten, a nobody. He could not allow that to happen. It felt good to be talked about. It made him feel alive.
Oh, yeah, I've had the do-gooders all right. The ones who want to save me or give comfort to the victims if they can. Some just want to make money out of selling my story. But you're not like them. The fact you don't care about the victims pleases me. You know why? Because they're not really victims. By answering my ad, they dictated their own fate.
I agree, Matthew simply said, his perfectly manicured nails drumming the table separating them. He seemed oblivious to the action, too wrapped up in what Mason had to say. The last time we spoke, you told me about Becky. How quickly did you move on from her to your next victim? Did she stay in your memory or just evaporate? Evaporate? Matthew's choice of words was curious. The man had intrigued Mason from the start. Perhaps it was because he could recognize some of himself in his expressionless, deep-set eyes. He spoke about people as if they were nothing. Perhaps that's why he had opened up to him. He had met a kindred soul.
I have a special place in my memory for all of the people I met during that time.
So you've relived each kill, Matthew said, a hint of a smile on his lips.
Continuously. Although it fades, I'm sad to say. It's hard to keep the memories fresh.
Matthew nodded knowingly. Keeping the memories alive is important. Unless you plan on not getting caught. Mason snorted.
Everybody gets caught in the end.
Not everybody. Narrowing his eyes, Mason's words took on a serious tone.
You think you're better than me?
The nail drumming stopped as Matthew withdrew his hands. Far from it. I can only aspire to be like you. I just wish you hadn't got arrested.
You wouldn't be sitting here across from me otherwise,
Mason replied, stony-faced. But I would have followed you with interest. Who knows the good work you could have done if the police hadn't cut it short?
Good work,
Mason said, failing to hide his annoyance.
I wasn't interested in good work, as you put it. I purely satisfied my own needs.
And I've enjoyed hearing about them, Matthew said, steering the conversation away from his own motivations. I've spent many happy hours reading up on what you did to those sluts.
So now it's time for you to return the favor,
Mason said, his tongue darting from between his lips as he licked them.
Tell me about your latest kill.
Chapter 36. Their banter was short-lived as Ruby and Luddy returned to the station. The arrival of the third photo filled Ruby with a sense of despair. They were too late. Their time had run out. Cheryl was dead. They were dealing with a serial killer,
and now their suspicions had been confirmed, the two incidents would continue to be investigated as one. Ruby paced the room as she spoke to D.C. Rutherford, the family liaison officer assigned to the families involved. Usually one officer would be involved with each family, but cutbacks meant that he was juggling both. It was the same everywhere in the emergency services. As Ruby had told her team several times, there was no point in complaining. They had to knuckle down like everybody else. She was grateful that they were keeping their heads above water staff-wise, at least. She did not always see eye to eye with DCI Warrow, but her superior had her back when it came to allocating officers to her team. Ruby pressed her mobile phone to her ear to overcome the sound of background noise. Phone chatter, keyboards clacking, and a tray full of empty mugs being carried to the sink were just a few of the sounds she had to contend with. Her office was no better, the noise of the busy streets filtering into her window, punctuated by the occasional siren as her uniformed colleagues rushed from job to job. Despite making the best of their resources, time was something they could not stall. "At least we managed to intercept the photo," D.C. Rutherford said, relief evident in his tone. "It came from a courier, paid cash by all accounts. Her husband's asked to see it, but I've told him that's not happening." "You can say that again," Ruby said. Things were bad enough without him being put through that. The fact it had come by courier was a deviation from the original murders and could hopefully provide further clues. "And the finger?" she said, dreading his response. "We intercepted it at his workplace. Just as with Melissa, it came wrapped in tissue paper in a padded envelope. It was like he wanted her husband to find it, which is why, I'm guessing, he didn't send it to Cheryl's home address." "Bastard," Ruby said, her jaw set firm to keep her rising emotions at bay. "He copies the murders perfectly, but the delivery is erratic and unpredictable. I guess he has more choices than Mason did back then. Or maybe he's honing his methods, seeing what works best." "And I take it none of this is known to the press?" D.C. Rutherford said. "Not yet," Ruby said, taking a break from pacing to lean against an unoccupied office desk. "It's all the more reason to keep it quiet. How are you managing? You okay with all this? I know it's pretty grim." "You don't join this job for candy floss and unicorns," D.C. Rutherford said, his smile carrying on his voice. Ruby snorted. Even during times like these, they could find a way of raising morale. It was the only way to deal with the horrors around them. It would have been too easy to scream in frustration, to allow the tears to come. But her team needed a strong leader, and she would not let them down. "If it all gets too much, just let us know. At least you can cross-reference the family tree with both cases. See if they've got any links with friends, work colleagues. We need to get to the heart of who's passing out these invites. There's got to be a link somewhere." "Leave it with me," D.C. Rutherford said. "I'll upload the pictures and email you a password-protected copy. The finger is en route to Bones." Ruby wondered what clues the crime scene officer could gain from another severed finger, but was glad everything was under control. "I take it the photo's similar to the last one, same M.O.?" "Yes. Hog-tied on the bed. Seems like a hotel. That look on her face. I'd say it was snapped not long after she died." A brief silence fell as Ruby gathered her thoughts. She tried to push aside the feeling of helplessness that was coming in waves. She was not in this alone. She had to have faith in her team. She said her goodbyes to D.C. Rutherford and ended the call. "Tea?" Luddy said, passing her a steaming mug. "Cheers, mate," she replied, wearily accepting the brew. "The third photo of Cheryl has come in. It looks like we're too late. Are we any closer to tracking down the hotel?" From the moment DC Rutherford had informed Downs, he had requested a meeting with DC Iwaro to bring her up to speed. Not all briefings included the ground troops. Some were for high-ranking officers only, and she knew Downs would be feeling the squeeze. We've marked out a perimeter and are speaking to hoteliers and guest houses in the area. It's tough, though. They're very tight-lipped. And I can't see any of them offering to check the rooms, either, Ruby said. The last photo is on its way to us now. Hopefully you'll be able to narrow it down. If not, I'll round up some ground troops, start knocking on hotel room doors. An obvious police presence would persuade hoteliers to be a bit more receptive. Ruby had no qualms about involving uniformed officers. Their presence would be deemed bad publicity, and the hotel manager would no doubt be more likely to comply. Chapter 37. Pacing the station car park, Ruby inhaled one last puff from the vaporizer in her hand. A quick phone call to her mother's care home left her satisfied that her presence was not needed. It made her smile to discover that Kathy, her daughter, was visiting that day. Taking a deep breath, she focused her mind on the case as she pushed her security tag against the panel on the wall. As she entered their office, she became immediately aware of the fact that her team looked like something out of the mannequin challenge. Figures sat unmoving at their desks. Officers were huddled around the photocopier, and Luddy stood in the middle of the floor with a piece of paper in his hand. But her team had not become suddenly frozen in time. The muffled shouting coming from the office of D.I. Downs was what stole their attention. The high-pitched, strident voice could only be that of D.C. Iwaro, because nobody else would speak to Downs like that. Usually calm and collected, it was a novelty to hear her lose her temper in such a way. It was hardly any wonder that her team were drawn to the argument, temporarily forgetting the urgency of their tasks. Unease at the top spread downwards. This was not going to help morale. She coughed loudly, and it had the desired effect as everyone quickly returned to work. "What's going on?" she said to Richard, as she crossed the floor to his desk. His was located nearest to the DI's workspace. Surely he had heard what the argument was about. "Not my circus, not my monkeys," Richard replied flatly, returning his attention to his computer screen. "Fine," Ruby said, with begrudging admiration. Creeping towards the office, she peered through the drawn blinds to see a sliver of Downs's arms waving in the air as he spoke. This was not a good sign. Normally he kept his temper in check and took whatever Warrow had to give him. But today it seemed that he'd had enough. She approached the office, wondering if she should interrupt. Things seemed to be escalating, and he had his limits. It had been hard for him, being supervised by someone less than half his age, with a fraction of his experience. DCI Warrow was a strong woman and did not mince her words. Ruby turned away from the door. She would find out soon enough. If Downs was getting a telling off, then it would most certainly filter down to her. Instead, she strode into her office and dialed his mobile number. She groaned as it rang off the hook, and his desk phone elicited the same. No response. That wasn't like him. Usually he would be glad of an excuse to be rescued, but today it seemed he was holding his own. A door slammed in the distance, and Ruby watched as he left his own office in a strop. Ruby's head swiveled from left to right as she caught Warrow striding in the opposite direction, her arms swinging as she walked. She felt a pang of worry. Was Warrow going upstairs to report the state of play? Keeping their heads bowed, Ruby's team did not afford her eye contact as she trotted outside after D.I. Downs to find out what was wrong. After catching sight of him getting into his car, she ran across the car park and jumped into the passenger seat beside him. Filled with fury, Downs's eyes lit upon her. "Steady on, boss, everything all right?" Ruby said, her face creased with worry as she caught her breath. Downs's muscles seemed to relax as he took her presence in.
I thought you were Warrow, he said in a terse exhale. Who the feck does she think she is talking to me like that?
Like what? Ruby asked. What happened? What were you shouting about?
Downs shook his head in disgust.
It's not what happened. It's the way she talks to me. I'm sick to the teeth of her lack of respect. I have fillings older than her. Do you know what she had the cheek to say?
Downs said, his Northern Irish accent coming through loud and clear.
That if I couldn't manage my team, then she'd find someone who could. Well, I told her a few home truths to be sure. Oh, yes, I did.
Ruby grimaced. Words like that were bound to press anybody's buttons. But she still wanted to know what had been said. What was she so pissed about?
That photo of Cheryl Barber, for starters. She promised the command team we'd find her in time. Well, she shouldn't be making promises she can't keep, and that's not all.
What else? Ruby groaned.
It's only going to hit the press, isn't it? Someone's blabbed, and all the details of Philip Sherman's misses are going to be all over the tabloids. They've been ringing the press office before it goes on. Sherman's trying to put a stop to it, but if he can't, it might go global.
Shit, Ruby said, feeling sick to the core. It doesn't mean it was us that squealed. In fact, I don't think it was. There's lots of other people who know about the case. You can't be responsible for them all.
I am, according to Warrow, Downs replied. You know what I told her when I left?
A satisfied smile was spreading across his face, which had now lost all of its colour. Ruby groaned. Given Warrow's tight expression, she knew it was not good.
What did you say? I told her to fuck right off. And then, do you know what I told her?
A shallow laugh escaped his lips. Ruby knew this was serious, but she could not help but join in. Downs's shoulders shook with laughter as he tried to relate the words.
You're scaring me now, Ruby said, smiling despite the awfulness of it all. I...
Downs laughed, then snorted, before clearing his throat.
I told her to stick her job up her skinny little arse and not to bother me again. Flamin' Nora!
He blurted another laugh.
I'm really for the high jump this time.
Ruby groaned at the scenario playing out before them. What she would have given to have been a fly on the wall.
Jack, what have you done?
She shook her head in bewilderment. Worse things than this had happened in his career. Why was he so on edge now? He had put his job and future pension at risk. Downs rubbed his chest, his face pallid.
I bet she's marched up to the command team, as thick as two planks, repeating every word I've said. She's been wanting to get rid of me for ages. I've just given her the ammunition to do it. And you know what?
Downs said.
I don't care. I've had enough of this place. This job? All I want to do right now is to go home and get pissed.
No, you don't, Ruby said, placing her hand on his arm. She was all too aware of the problems he'd had with alcohol in the past. If he lost his job like this, things would take a turn for the worse in every aspect of his life. She needed to turn this around. Philip Sherman likes you. Why don't you give him a call? Try to find out who's been talking. He's got cleaning staff in the house. Anyone could have listened in.
And what about Warrow? Downs said. No doubt she's typing up my resignation letter as we speak.
She can't just sack you like that. Hell, if someone was sacked every time they answered back in this job, the station would be empty. We've all been feeling the pressure. Nobody can blame you for letting off some steam. I'll go and speak to her, see if I can smooth things over, but you have to be prepared to apologize.
Downs rolled his eyes at the very suggestion.
Apologize, my arse! She can feck right off!
Why are you suddenly starting to sound like an extra from Father Ted? Ruby laughed, referring to an Irish comedy program that was peppered with swear words from the off. Downs shrugged his shoulders. I'm tired. Tired of taking everyone else's shit. Do you see the hours we put in last week? And not an ounce of thanks from above? What's the point? We're just pissing against the wind.
But it's always been that way, Ruby said. You know better than to expect recognition. Waro's just frustrated because she's been getting it in the neck too.
Oh, I know she has,
Downs said, his laughter turning into a grimace as he gave his chest another rub.
Are you all right? Ruby said, horrified to see the last of the colour drain from his face, a blue tinge touching his lips.
His forehead beaded with perspiration. He grunted a response, his face tightening as he grasped the left side of his chest.
My chest! Pain!
Bent over in two, it was all he could manage, his teeth clenched as he spoke. Filled with terror, Ruby fumbled with her job radio. I'm calling an ambulance, she said. Taking a deep breath, she notified control. Chapter 38 Ruby paused at the open doorway of the hospital room, watching a nurse she recognized squeeze Jack Downs's hand. She realized that it was the same woman who helped him get through his wife's illness before she died. It was not the first time Ruby had caught them chatting intimately, and she smiled as she entered the room. Quickly turning on her heel, the ward sister gave her a gracious nod.
You old dog, Ruby said, as soon as the woman left.
There are easier ways of asking her out than feigning your own death.
Well, it seems to have done the trick,
Downs joked, looking pleased with himself. Dressed in a grey T-shirt and jogging bottoms, he had declined the usual hospital robe. Sitting on top of the blankets, his long legs were crossed, with pillows supporting his back.
Good for you, Ruby said. There's more to life than work, but you gave me a hell of a fright back there.
It wasn't exactly a party for me either, Downs replied. Rubbing his chest, the memory of the pain still etched on his face. After a barrage of tests, Ruby had been relieved to hear the conclusion. It was not the heart attack she had feared, but angina, which is often brought on in times of stress. Her chair screeched against the floor as she pulled it beside the bed.
I hope you're going to take some time off work, she said, taking the weight off her feet.
I feel a bit stupid now, but I honestly thought my number was up. He raised his hand in a theatrical manner, looking up to the ceiling as he spoke.
I remember thinking, just as the white light was about to swallow me, of all the ways I had to go, it would have to be on the job with you.
You should be so lucky, Ruby replied, her face breaking into a smile.
But seriously, Jack, treat this as a warning. No job is worth compromising your health. If it's really bothering you that much, then maybe you should consider early retirement, although I really don't want to see you go.
Oh, I'm not going anywhere, you daft mare, Downs said. If anything, today might have helped. I can use it as an excuse. Say I wasn't thinking straight when I told her to stick her job up her skinny arse.
She was probably pushing pins into her voodoo doll. I reckon she's got ones of us all.
Ruby smiled, her face growing serious as she thought about how close they'd come. Things could have been so much worse.
What's really bothering you? Because it's more than Waro losing her rag. She wouldn't have gone off like that if you hadn't blown your top.
Downs rolled his eyes. Here I am after nearly popping the clogs, and you're questioning me like a number one suspect? Jesus, woman, have a heart.
It's because I care, Ruby replied. Please, tell me what's wrong. You've had enough drama from me over the years. It's about time I returned the favour.
Downs sighed as he conceded. All right, then. You've worn me down, but at least close the door.
As she did what he asked, Ruby was grateful that his insurance covered a private room. She took her seat and silenced her phone, devoting her full attention to what he was about to say. Folding his arms, Downs gave her a cautious glance. This is just between us, mind. I don't want anyone else to know. You have my word, Ruby said, wondering what could have driven him to the edge. You're right. I am moving on, starting to let go of my wife. But there's one thing that's resurfaced from the past, and it's been playing on my mind. He paused, his brow furrowed. In the hall, a trolley squeaked past, laden with medication. It all came to a head when I heard that the Lonely Hearts killer had hit the press. Even if Sherman puts a stop to it, they're still going to run a then and now story, devoting coverage to Mason Gatley, with a mention to present-day Dayton sites. Downs fell silent, lost in his thoughts. But we handle lots of cases, Ruby interjected. What's so special about this one? Downs seemed to mull it over before delivering a reply. You know I worked some of the original case, don't you? I was just a DC back then, going through the evidence and reporting my finds. The wife and I, well, we were going through a rough patch. Downs looked at her ruefully. A rough patch that lasted about 5 years. I was working long hours, trying to prove myself. I neglected her. That's how it was with a lot of coppers' wives. It was when I was going through the letters that I recognized her writing. It knocked me for six. Wait a minute, Ruby said, confusion crossing her face. What letters? The ones written to Mason Gatley. A proper Lothario he was back then. He could pick and choose his victims. Most were lonely married women, in need of a bit of attention. Some got more than they bargained for, and my wife could have been one of them. You're joking, Ruby said. Your wife wrote to Mason Gatley asking for a hookup. Straightening up in his bed, Downs nodded his response. It was just a letter, one letter, saying how lonely she was. I don't know if he ever replied. I don't think she would have gone as far as meeting up. Mason's ad offered to make things better, give them a boost, put things back on track. What a load of bullshit. I'm just grateful we caught him. She could have died. What did you do about the letter? Ruby said. The only thing I could do, Downs replied. I destroyed it. I knew nobody would miss just one. Silence fell as his words hung in the air. Ruby could not believe her ears. All the times Downs had told her off for bending the rules, and he had destroyed evidence in a murder investigation. Did you ever tell anyone? Ruby said. Downs shook his head. That's why I didn't want you visiting Mason. It's been keeping me awake at night. I don't know if he ever realized that he received a letter from my missus. He was a clever bastard, and I wouldn't put it past him to stalk his victims before he moved in for the kill. To this day, I don't know. How would he know where you lived? Ruby said, trying to place Downs's actions with the man she knew today. Because she gave her address, of course. How else was he going to write back? And yes, before you ask, she was that gullible. But that's what I loved about her. She wasn't hardened to the world like me. I only thank God I was able to find it and save her the embarrassment of it coming out. What did she say when you confronted her? Ruby said, feeling sympathy for the man before her. He looked tired and unshaven, but at least some colour had returned to his cheeks. Downs gave Ruby a meaningful stare. You mean you never told her you knew? Ruby said, utilizing her ability to read his expressions. Downs delivered a brief nod of the head. I took it as a warning, a chance to make things better between us. I booked a holiday, took some time off to treat her like she deserved. I know she hadn't been unfaithful, but she had come close. I made sure that wouldn't happen again. So you never spoke about it? She must have been shocked to hear you were on the case. Ruby said, trying to imagine herself in the same situation. Downs tilted his head to one side as he resurrected memories long past.
I think she came close to telling me a few times, and perhaps she was aware that I knew. In a way, it was the best thing that could have happened, me finding out like that. I didn't know that our days together were numbered, and we made every moment count. I still hung on to my job. I think she wanted it here as a backup for after she was gone.
I'm so sorry, Ruby replied, feeling helpless at the futility of her words.
Don't be, Downs said simply. You've nothing to be sorry for. I was the one who drove her away. I'm only glad I got her back.
Ruby nodded, trying to understand. She was hot-headed at times. She would not have been as gracious in such circumstances as D.I. Downs.
So what now? She asked.
Downs responded with a smile. I take my medication and go back to work. Now that you know, I don't need to get wound up about it anymore. I was just worried that Mason would use it as ammo. I didn't want to think of him talking about her and disrespecting her name.
I'm sure if he knew, he would have rubbed it in my face by now, Ruby said. He wouldn't have passed up the opportunity to get a reaction.
I'll have a word with Warrow, see if we can get things back on track with your job.
Have they found her yet, Cheryl? I presume they have.
Ruby's expression was downcast. I wasn't going to say anything. The update came through when you were being taken in.
It's as much as I expected. I take it she's dead.
Yes, she was found by the hotel maid, Ruby said. Just like Melissa, sitting up in bed holding a card. Only this time the word whore was written in blood. Her husband's being updated as we speak, which is why I have to get back, I'm afraid.
Downs reached out and squeezed her hand in an act of thanks.
Just catch this killer. We've got to get him, Ruby. We can't allow any more people to get hurt.
Chapter 39 Laura sat with her legs crossed, smoothing down her newly straightened hair. She had finally raised enough money to buy a pair of GHDs. It was only a matter of time before her sister took them, but at least she was coming to the helpline center feeling good about herself. Gathered in a circle, she smiled at her fellow volunteers, ready to pick over the bones of this week's calls. After ensuring everyone was equipped with a hot cup of tea, Anne, their team manager, took a seat in her swivel chair. Her face was taut. Just this once, the phones were off the hook. The silence was unprecedented, but calls would not go unanswered as they were diverted to the national line.
Right. As you all know, we've called this meeting to discuss a case due to some concerns that have been raised. I've brought this meeting forward to discuss the ground rules, rather than an individual case. I know some of you are worried, but we're not meant to discuss calls in detail. Much less take notes, as several of you have done.
She met Laura's gaze.
I know you mean well, but if this gets out, then people may stop confiding in us. Worse still, our branch could be closed down because of failure to abide by the rules. Some of our callers are a hair's breadth away from suicide. We've got to put them first.
I don't see the harm in discussing it. There's only a few of us here.
Joseph Kaleha, a long-term volunteer, cradled his mug of tea in his hands. His dark brown eyes were filled with sincerity as he spoke.
We're not going to put it on Facebook or call the press. And we've had quite a few calls from Matthew, each one more disturbing than the last.
I know you're worried about Matthew, but what do you want us to do about it?
Anne glanced around the room.
We're not the police. We offer a listening service, and that's as far as it goes. You know that our usual callers pose harm only to themselves. We've no way of knowing if what Matthew says is true.
It's here in black and white. Everything matches up, Laura said,
her words filled with conviction as she held her newspaper aloft.
They say there's a copycat killer on the loose. I'm sure Matthew has something to do with it.
Your imagination is running riot, Anne interrupted. I've read that article. There's no victims' names mentioned, much less the fact your caller is responsible for their deaths. Laura frowned.
But there's nothing to say that he isn't, either. I don't want to stop volunteering, but it's no great secret where the centre's located. I'm scared I'll come out some night to find some weirdo standing in the shadows waiting to grab me.
Anne exhaled loudly. Weirdos? I'm challenging you for that remark. Weren't you listening to any of the training when you came on board?
Steady on, girl, Jean said, resting her hand on Anne's shoulder.
The 65-year-old woman was the most experienced of the group and had seen and heard it all.
She's just a teenager. That's how they talk these days.
She winked at Laura from behind Anne's back. Laura bit back her smile, trying to appear as remorseful as she could. Her role as a volunteer had provided some much-needed experience, and a reference from Anne would be needed when she decided to move on.
Sorry, she said. I didn't mean it like it sounded. I'm just worried. This Matthew, the stuff he's coming out with. Dating married women, then punishing them for being unfaithful? It's weird. Now he's started asking for me by name. It feels like it's coming to a head and I'm worried what's next.
Whose fault is that? Anne reprimanded.
You're feeding him information. You know the rules. We don't engage in two-way conversations, and you should never give your real name.
People can be manipulative, and they'll prize information out of you in any way they can.
To be honest, I'm beginning to wonder if this is the right place for you.
Joseph raised his eyebrows.
Well, I've been in this game a very long time, and I think you're being a bit harsh. Yes, she is inexperienced, but she's doing her best and puts in more shifts than most. I've listened to her during some right dodgy calls, and she takes them in her stride. But Matthew is different. I've spoken to him too, and we have a right to be worried.
Laura warmed from the inside out. Joseph was her dad's age and had barely spoken to her before. She had no idea that he valued her contribution to the team. Then again, perhaps he didn't want to cover her shifts if she left. Regardless, she acknowledged him with a gracious nod, making a mental note to bring him in some chocolate biscuits as a gesture of thanks. Anne rubbed her face, exhaling a long, terse breath.
Okay, let's focus on Matthew then. So far we've gathered that he's local, and seems to have a fixation on women who cheat on their husbands, but he's not made any direct threats to us.
Maybe not, Laura piped up, but he mentioned teaching a lesson to a Melissa and a Cheryl. My uncle, he's working on the murder case mentioned in the paper. Two women with these names were found dead after meeting some guy from an online dating site for married men and women.
Anne shook her head.
Melissa and Cheryl are hardly unique names. You know most of our clients use pseudonyms when they call. Unless he's made a specific threat, then you've nothing to worry about.
But Laura did not look convinced.
All the same, she said, staring at the floor. I don't want to talk to him the next time he calls.
Anne grunted.
And how do you suggest we do that? We can't monitor the calls, and we certainly can't pass our callers to someone else if we don't like what they're saying.
I think we need to establish some positive action,
Jean said, raising her hand to stall the argument. We've laboured the point about ground rules. God knows I don't want to pick up the newspaper and find out some poor devil's been murdered, but I can't see how there's a lot we can do.
The police can log things as intelligence, Laura said. It just comes up on their computer system, so it lets everyone know.
You've not been speaking to your uncle about this, have you? Anne said, stiffening in her chair. The fact Laura's uncle was a police officer was well known within the group. Laura shook her head vehemently, her straightened blonde ponytail swaying with her. She had been tempted to confide in him at the time, but wanted to speak to the group first.
Of course not. It's just things I'll pick up. Mum said if I'm worried about something at work, then I should be straight with you. It's better than just walking out. Seems to me enough people have done that already.
We're not liaising with the police, Anne said. I can tell you that for starters.
I'm trying to protect what we have here. There are rules in place and we have to stick to them if we want to keep going. Sure, we have funding now, but if we get bad publicity as a result of something we've said, then they could close us down.
She gave Laura a gentle smile. Of course I want to keep you safe. I want to look after all our volunteers. I'm just disappointed because you've interacted with the caller more than you should. From now on, don't be drawn into conversation. Focus on how they're feeling and put the onus on them. This could just be a poor, tortured soul that's fabricating all of this as an excuse to speak to another human being. This society we live in, it makes us so very insulated. People are so caught up in the virtual world that they can go days without speaking to another living soul. That's what I love about what we have. Real, warm, human voices on the line. I don't think our caller is a threat to anyone.
What if you're wrong? Laura said. What if another woman is in danger? What then?
To be honest, I don't think it's appropriate that your uncle has been talking with you about his investigation, but that's your business. Anne sighed. I can't physically stop you talking to him. But if you break the rules again, then we don't have a place for you here anymore. Laura nodded dumbly, lowering her gaze to the floor. Her position had been made clear. Now she had to decide what to do about it. Would she stay and take the risk, or leave and report the caller to her uncle? Without proof, there wouldn't be much the police could do.
I'll stay, she said, speaking what felt like famous last words. You never know. We might not hear from him again.
Chapter 40. Tapping lightly on DCI Warrow's door, Ruby awaited a response. A furtive, shuffling noise from within signalled her presence, but she seemed in no hurry to respond. "Mum, it's me, Ruby," she said, slowly opening the door. She frowned as she caught sight of DCI Warrow with her back to her, her shoulders hunched. But she refused to be put off and slid inside before closing the door behind her.
"I'm busy," Warrow said, her words muffled with tears. Come back later."
Ruby didn't move. She softened her voice, having left her judgment at the door. She was all too aware of the pressure DCI Warrow would have been under to have made her snap. It was hard getting to the top so young, and not something Ruby envied.
"I've been to see D.I. Downs," she said. "They're letting him out later today."
Plucking a tissue from her pocket, Warrow dabbed her eyes before turning around. Their puffiness told Ruby she had been crying for some time. She hated seeing her colleagues at each other's throats.
"Really?" Warrow said, having contacted Ruby for an update earlier in the day.
He'll be fine once he gets a bit of rest. He... Ruby paused, mentally assembling her words. He's asked me to apologize for his behavior. He's been very stressed. Finding out about Cheryl and details of the case hitting the press just made things worse.
I know all about stress, Worry said. I'm being held fully responsible as to the direction that this case is taking. I promised results, and now another woman is dead. Then there's the press. If we can't trust our officers to keep this information to themselves...
She wrung the tissue between her fingers, trying but failing to keep calm.
I mean, how many times have we told them? This is sensitive information. Under no circumstances are they to discuss it outside of work.
With all respect, Mum, I don't believe it came from one of our officers.
Yes, well, we're the ones getting the blame, Waro said. And the only way to make things right is to catch this killer in his tracks before someone else dies.
Ruby nodded, her hands clasped behind her back. Waro always made her feel like she was walking on eggshells, and it could not be any more different to her relationship with D.I. Downs.
We all feel the same way, and we're working around the clock. D.I. Downs is going to smooth things over with Philip Sherman when he gets out. Hopefully he can find out where the leak originated.
Warrow's face thawed a little.
As for the way he spoke to me, has he told you about that?
From what I gather, things got very heated on both sides, Mum, Ruby said diplomatically. But it's important to keep morale up as we work through the investigation.
It's all right for you, Waro said. You have the respect of your team, and Downs is your right-hand man. But if I died tomorrow, I'm sure that team of yours would be singing Ding Dong the Witch is Dead before my body was put in the ground.
Ruby frowned. It was unlike Waro to be so maudlin. But it wasn't as if she could put her arm around her and say that everything was going to be okay. Besides, she had a point. She was never going to win any popularity contests. The higher the rank, the more distant you were from the rest of the team.
You've always been a stable leader, Ruby said, choosing to focus on the positives. We respect you for that. But it's important we keep a united front if we're to focus on the task in hand.
Ruby caught Warrow's expression of mild annoyance and remembered who she was talking to.
Sorry. I don't mean to tell you how to do your job. I can only imagine how difficult it is, working with such tight resources and dwindling budgets. Then throw a celebrity into the mix and it becomes overwhelming for us all. But we will get through this, and I'll use whatever measures necessary to find our suspect and bring them in.
Waro straightened her stature.
I agree with keeping a strong front, and I'd be grateful if you keep the details of this meeting to yourself.
Ruby nodded in agreement. She was hardly likely to go back and say she'd seen her DCI blubbing in her office due to an argument earlier on.
Tell me, do you think Mason Gatley is involved? Waro said. I read your report. Is another visit worthwhile?
I think Mason's enjoying the attention, but I may have a way of turning that around to our advantage.
Good, Waro said, the primness returning to her tone.
Their conversation was interrupted by a ringing telephone.
Damn it, I forgot. I've got a meeting scheduled. Perhaps we can finish this conversation another time.
Of course, Ruby said, taken aback by her supervisor's language. It was another chink in the armor of a woman they called the Ice Queen. Ruby tried to imagine herself in the same position. It only cemented the decision to stay where she was in the ranks. She turned to leave, reminding herself to sort out another visit to Mason.
Oh, and Ruby, Waro said, silencing her phone. If you're talking to Downs, tell him we'll keep this morning between us. Draw a line under the whole thing.
Yes, Mum, Ruby said, before turning to leave. She was beginning to feel like a UN peace negotiator by the time she left. After a quick cigarette, Ruby walked to her office, surprised to see D.I. Downs sitting in her chair. She cradled the cup of tea Richard had just made, feeling pleased with herself that she had managed to avert Downs from suspension. Had that happened, he would be cracking open the bottle of whiskey that she knew he kept in the cabinet in his house. It was very expensive fine malt, one he kept for the worst of emergencies, but Ruby was equipped with the knowledge that once he started to drink from that bottle, he would not be able to stop. Such was the history between them. They knew of each other's weaknesses and learned to tap into each other's strengths. "You're looking like the cat that got the cream," she said, taking a seat beside him. "And I didn't expect to see you again so soon."
That was a good idea of mine, giving Philip Sherman a call."
His eyes glinted in the knowledge that it was Ruby he had to thank.
"Oh, yeah?" Ruby said, giving him a wry smile as she tipped the mug to her lips.
"Turns out you're right. It was one of the housekeepers. Sherman had her followed. Caught her accepting a payout from the newspaper that took the report. He threatened to sue the paper, citing slander if they mention his wife by name. Not just that, but he's going to get in touch with Waro and apologize for his earlier outburst."
"Blimey, how did you manage that?" Ruby said. Philip Sherman did not seem like the type of man who apologized for anything.
"Let's just say I have my ways," Downs said. "Mind you, it could all be for nothing if I've lost my job. You've not seen her about, have you? I came in to grovel."
Ruby paused. She would have loved to have told him about Warrow's outburst and the fact the woman cried real tears. But she felt solidarity towards her female colleague, despite the fact they did not always get along.
"I spoke to her on your behalf. She's gone no further with it, wants to draw a line under it all."
Downs's face lit up in a smile as he clapped her heartily on the back.
"Really? You're a lifesaver, that's what you are. A lifesaver."
Ruby gasped at the display of strength.
"Steady on. I need my lungs for smoking. Don't want you dislodging them when we've so much to do."
"You could be right there," Downs said. "They've tracked down Mason Gatley's son. He works in a coffee kiosk in Liverpool Street Station. Letty's getting the tube over there now."
"Not without me," Ruby said, shrugging on her harness and clipping her radio back onto her belt. Chapter 41.
"What is it? What's wrong?"
The young man glared warily at Ruby and Luddy amid the hustle and bustle of evening commuters. It had been quicker to come by tube, given rush hour traffic was in full flow. Having persuaded Mason's son, James, to leave his kiosk in the hands of his colleagues, Ruby was keen to take him to one side. The only resemblance Ruby could see between James and his father was his sandy-coloured hair, which was cropped short. The same height as his father, James stood with slouched shoulders and the composure of someone who preferred to be lost in the crowd. Ruby guessed it was due to the devastation his father had caused. After pointing out there was nothing to worry about, she asked James if they could find a quiet spot to talk.
"You're kidding me, aren't you?"
James said, raising his voice over the sounds of the tannoy. "I run a coffee kiosk and it's rush hour. Time is money. What do you want?"
"It's about your father," Ruby said, hence the need for privacy.
James grimaced at the mention of Mason's name.
"Fine, we'll talk outside. But that's it. I'm not having you coming to my home. 5 minutes and we're done."
Liverpool Street housed both a train and tube station, making it one of the busiest places in London to be. Ruby was dreading the ride home on a packed tube. She dodged a woman wheeling a suitcase while carrying a baby on her hip. All around her, work-weary commuters hustled to their trains and tubes, desperate to get home. But respite was hours away for Ruby. As they walked up the steps to the main concourse, she focused her mind on what lay ahead, Having led him to the quietest space she could find, James turned to Ruby, grim-faced.
"Is he dead? Is that what you've come here to tell me?"